Dragon's Landing Podcast, Episode 2, for Sunday, July 24th. Welcome to the Dragon's Landing Inn, the podcast for gamers
and the aliens who probe them.
Welcome to today's show. This is episode 2 for Dragon's Landing. Thank you for joining us once again.
Thanks a lot. Yeah, we're glad that you could come back and listen to us again this week. We got a lot of interesting and very good shows, and I'm already starting on the uhs, but let me, for the listeners who heard last week, my vow for this week is 20% fewer ums.
So start counting.
Yeah. So keep tally at home. Play along.
It's an interactive game. All right.
Right now, if you're not aware of where we're from Springfield, Missouri, right here in the heart of the Ozarks. And it is freaking hot outside right now and has been for the last several days. Makes me very, 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 very glad that we have our little studio here set up in my basement.
Yes, definitely.
With nice air conditioning and a ceiling fan going. So.
And for anybody who says humidity has no effect on how miserable it is outside, you're wrong.
Yeah.
I've been in Arizona at 105, 110 degree weather, and that was nicer than our 100 degree weather here.
Oh, I know. I had a friend who moved to Colorado, which is basically humidity free.
Mm-hmm.
And he was there for about a year, about 6 months to a year before he finally came back to visit. And whenever he came back to visit, his car started sputtering.
As soon as he came down
into the humidity, it just his car didn't want to run nearly as well as it did. So
maybe that's our problem.
Yeah.
That could be.
Maybe if I got up to higher levels, my stuttering and ums would go away. Maybe I could actually achieve 50% fewer ums.
You can convince the wife of that? Got to move
probably,
to Denver?
Probably not. Denver's a neat place, though. I enjoyed it when I was there. Yeah.
So anyway, we have had some exciting events happen that we'll be telling you about over the next few weeks, starting today, actually. We've got Michael Treska, who has most recently written for Goodman Games, The Complete Book of Werewolves. We'll talk with him today.
Mm-hmm. And we've got some... Creative Mountain Games sent us just a bunch of stuff to review. I'm really only going to be able to give a kind of an overview of what they had, but it was some really neat stuff. And later on, I'm going to go over and give you my impressions of what they had to send, and that's going to lead into a little giveaway that we're putting together here on the show. So
where you can get the free copies that we got.
Yeah. So, and on top of that, we're going to be focusing later on in our feature on ways of using techniques that authors use to create characters for their books, ways of using those to help you create backgrounds for your own characters to make your characters more well-rounded and a little bit more fun to play and a little, you know, and easier to develop as they go along. So, well, I guess we're going to start it off with our Cheapskate Games section. Once again, this is the section where we're looking at cheaper ways of finding things that you can use to enhance your role-playing game experience. And today's that we came across it's not exactly cheap, but when compared to what it's replacing, you save quite a bit of money that way. Lonnie?
Absolutely. Well, we started off wandering around, now it's my turn for the hours. We started wandering around Walmart, trying to find things that could be used, whether for miniatures or, you know, posters for the DM to use or whatever. Started off in the craft section, and we did find some interesting stuff there, although maybe of limited use. If you do use maps, we found, of course, you can get the little rocks meant for, you know, the water. I can't even think, little fountains and stuff like that. You can use those to build up terrain if you want to do something like that. We also found the... Well, styrofoam.
Not to mention that there was also modeling clay and various things like that. If you're wanting, you know, if you're interested in actually trying to, you know, set up your map before the game and make it where it's very nice and where people can really get an idea of what it's going to look like. If you're into that kind of that level of detail, there is a lot of things in the craft section just at your basic Walmart that you can find that'll help you do that.
Right. One of the kind of fun ideas that we may have to play with. They had styrofoam balls and cones and stuff that if you can find just the right size to match your map, you know, you can cut a styrofoam ball in half, and it's about the right size. If you find, what we decide, an 8-inch was the right size for a fireball.
Yeah.
And you can place it on top and say, okay, here you go. Here's an example. You know, you can dye it red or however you want to do. And then we started wandering around toys and game sections, and here's where the fun began. We found HeroScape games, mm-hmm. or HeroScape?
Yeah, it's a board game right now that's being put out by Hasbro.
It's $40, which kind of sounds a little expensive at first, but it had 83 pieces of terrain that you could put together along with a big mat that was the water, and you can make some great 3D terrain with that, and it came with, I believe it was 45?
No, 30. It had 30.
Oh, 30. Came with 30 figurines, and they're pre-painted, they're plastic, they are the right size for a 1-inch square map, although their bases may be just a touch big, but they work great.
They look great, too.
Yes, they do. When you compare that to going out and spending $2.50 on a couple figurines, plus the paint and the brushes and the time that you'd have to put in there to get something that resembled the quality of these, you can also buy... I mean, this comes out a whole lot cheaper. You could also buy, for $10 a pack, they've got extra figurines.
Expansion packs for the game, basically.
Right.
But most of them had 7 or so more figurines in there.
Plus a few more tiles.
On the website, on the Hasbro website, they actually list several others that we didn't actually see at Walmart this time, but they do have them available, or they will become available. I think it's a pretty new game, and they're still rolling it out.
Seems like it.
But they have some that are, you know, they have... packs that range from the $10 to $20 range, some of them having, you know, different numbers in there, but one of the packs was about a $20 pack, but it had 5 large, I mean, it had like a Dracolich and some larger creatures that you can put in there. So it was, you know, for the price, you know, if you look at pewter figurines, if you look at the paint, and if you look at the time that it takes to paint these things, in a lot of ways, this is a whole lot better application of your time and money.
Right. And it's not just for fantasy buffs either. They've got different packs out there. Some of them are the more modern look.
Mm-hmm.
They do have more modern. They do have the fantasy. So they kind of cover both bases there for everybody out there. So that was our cheapskate game for the week, our little price-saving tip.
For those people who are interested in purchasing some things, we've been taking a look at some of the products that Creative Mountain Games has put out. They were kind enough to send us some for review. 3 bundles of their books that they have for sale on their website. The first one is the SRD 3.5 Revised Bundle. It's a bundle of PDFs that comes with an index PDF that'll let you access the other PDFs that are in there. And there's a single PDF for each section of the SRD, which makes it an easy resource for somebody when you're gaming and you need to find a rule really quickly or find a spell or a monster. For instance, the different sections, there are monsters sorted both in the standard descriptions from the monster manual as well as the stat blocks. There are the basic spell and magic rules, the divine rules, epic rules, and the spell lists for adept spells, assassin spells, blackguard spells, bard spells, cleric spells, domain spells, druid spells, paladin spells, ranger spells, sorcerer and wizard spells, all of them divided up into their own sections. So you can go right to it. You can find the spell you want. You can, and it will all be right there and really, really easy to use. As well as, there's another one also as well that covers the psionics rules too. So it's a very handy quick reference. The only drawback that I saw to it, I kind of like to thumb through publications and see the interior artwork, and there was no interior artwork in these. The cover artwork was very nice, but I don't think that was the point behind this product.
These are definitely a reference material. Mm-hmm. If you've got a laptop sitting in front of you or a desktop that you got in your gaming room, this makes very great, because don't forget, PDFs have search functions.
And I can forgive them that, because the other things that they sent us all did have some rather nice artwork and some interior artwork and various things like that. The second pack that we got was the Variant Rules pack, which had 3 PDFs in it. One of them was called Background, Contacts, Honor, and Reputation. And just as the title of it says, that is exactly what it has rules for. It's got tables for figuring out character wealth and the type of background that you come from, whether it's academic or aristocratic or government or mercantile or whatever.
Oh, and it should be mentioned, all of these products are geared towards the D20 line.
Yes, they are. They are. Creative Mountain Games is a D20 company, so. But on the background context on and reputation, it also gives you an idea of various different background activities that you can and skills that you can have achieved through your background. It's got rules for acquiring contacts and ways to measure honor and reputation and some sample codes of honor for paladins, cavalier type characters, things like that. There's another one in there called Horror, Cults, and Conspiracies.
That sounds like my favorite.
Yeah, it has some, it looks like it has some great ones for, you know, whether you're, and some of these things, obviously some of the ideas can be carried over to other systems too. You know, if you have any system where you might need to create a secret organization or something like that, definitely the guidelines in here would definitely be of a help. And this seems to basically approach the idea of creating an organization, a cult or something like that, from the standpoint of like you would be creating a character. It gives you rules for creating the organization, rules for how a person would interact with the organization, and also feats for the organization to give them more use directly within the game. And obviously, it has some sample organizations to show you how it all gets put together like that.
I think before my next game, I'll definitely be thumbing through that one again.
Yeah, no kidding. There's also a booklet on weather. And very simply put, it has rules for including all kinds of weather conditions in your gameplay. And very often, you know, we might say, oh, it's raining outside. But what effect does that have on the characters?
Exactly.
So that's, you know, that's a very handy thing to have too there.
You know, or a lot of times, especially in a fantasy game, you're playing and it's 150 degrees outside, you know, and you're sitting there in full plate armor, and that's going to have effects.
It's going to, definitely. Believe me, I'm in a t-shirt and shorts, and when I walk outside right now,
that's bad enough.
Bad enough. The last PDF that he sent us was one called the Favorites Bundle, and it was a zipped file with several PDFs. One of them was a source book for a town called Jalston. There were some NPC classes in there, one called the Country Clergy and one called the Trundle Folk. There was group combat feats, creation myth for the world of Revlok, which is the world I believe that these things are set in. Plexus Potent Portals, that looked like a very interesting book. It had a lot of neat doorways and portals and various things like that that you can throw into your campaign with, you know.
Some of them are traps. Some of them are ways to keep doors shut. I remember one that was, I think it was a shutter. It was either the shutter or the window to keep thieves out, because when the thief came through the window, he would have to suffer the effects of a sleep spell.
Yeah.
You know, so there's lots of neat ways to throw stuff like that into your campaign.
And then on top of that, in the Favorites Bundle, there's the there's an adventure called The Whispering Woodwind that looked like a lot of fun. And a couple of utilities that they have set up. Basically, they come as HTML files that you just open up in your web browser. And one of them allows you to generate unlimited titles. It's called the Unlimited Titles Generator. It generates unlimited titles for books. So the next time you're a DM and your characters are thumbing through an ancient and forbidden library, you have as many titles as you want to throw at them. As well, there's also a dwelling description generator in there that will help you describe what a dwelling looks like, what the inside of the dwelling looks like, what items inside the dwelling look like. You can basically use it to try and give you descriptions of all these kind of things. So it's very handy. Lots and lots of stuff. And
yeah, I wish we could have gone into more detail here. But a lot of this stuff is from his campaign that he's been running from 30 years in the same world. So
yeah.
Very detailed. And the way he puts the locations, especially, and the NPC classes, he gives you ideas in there of how to use them in your own campaign if you don't want to play it in his campaign world.
Mm-hmm.
So he makes it very easy to tie into whatever world you're doing there. And one of my favorite things, when he does locations, he separates them into two different books. One is the locus, he calls it, which is from the player's perspective. You know, and so instead of giving them a map that you've made up that might have too much information, you know, buying a standard module that everybody would be able to see, you can give them a PDF file that has just the stuff a player should know. Mm-hmm. And none of the stuff a DM should know. And it also comes with a separate one from the DM. And so he looks like he's put a lot of attention to detail in these things. They look wonderful.
Yeah. And, you know, I wish we had more time to go into all of this, but just a lot of stuff there. And the good part of all of this is Mark, the guy from the author of all of these things from Creative Mountain Games, he has given us permission to give away one copy of each of those to some lucky listeners. So we're going to have a little bit of a contest here. And the way we're going to do this, we've got some message boards sitting over there on our website at www.dragonslanding.com. And they're awful empty. They are awfully, awfully empty. They're just
lonely.
They are. And so what we want is we want some activity on the message boards. So here's what's going to happen. You have 2 weeks.
Up through, I believe it's Saturday, August 7th?
Yeah, that sounds about right. Let me take a look here real quick.
The Saturday, 2 weeks from, you know,
the Saturday today. Up until the Saturday, 2 weeks. Well, shoot. Hang on.
Because that'll give us time to figure out the winners and to post those.
Sunday, August 7th is Sunday. So up through Saturday, August 6th.
Off by a number.
Everyone up through midnight, Sunday, August 6th, Saturday, August 6th. And I will put it this way, midnight Central Time, because that's where I am. At that point, we will go through and take a look at everyone who has registered and posted on our website.
Well, maybe not exactly midnight. We'll probably still be gaming at midnight.
Very possibly, very possibly. But sometime around there. We're going to take a look at everybody who's posted. We're going to basically put all the numbers in a hat, or possibly put them all in a list and roll dice to do it, since this is a role-playing game show. But we're going to randomly select three of the people who have posted. And to encourage some good discussion, you get one entry per post. Now, this is real. These are real posts. We're not talking about spam posts here. We're not talking about coming on and just putting in one word or repeating the same word a bunch of times.
Yeah, so no coming in just saying, hi, I posted. Put me in the hat.
Exactly.
We want to
see some discussion. And if you come on there and you can start a topic or you add something valuable to a discussion, we will put your name in. We will put your name in there. If you put 5 posts, 10 posts, whatever, you'll be in that many times.
And to help you guys out, we are there. We do swing by every night.
At least once a day. Yeah,
at least once a day and check it out. So we'll be there helping you further the discussions to encourage more posts.
And remember, you can use that message board to post ideas for us to put on the show.
Like questions.
We are currently completely question-free for our question corner. And as we said last time, we are the podcast that fears no question. But we don't have any questions to ask, so I guess we don't have anything to fear.
Good.
Hey,
no fear.
No fear.
Those are good shirts.
But so we want some input. We want some back. You know, we've gotten a few people who have contacted us and said we'd like to see this or we'd like to see that. We actually have a little kind of humorous interview that we put together for later on in the show that actually came from one of those suggestions. So, and we appreciate those. We really like having that kind of input.
Absolutely.
And you can feel free to email us at dragonslanding@gmail.com to send us those suggestions or to send us your questions, or you can post them on the message board. No problem. But until we get something on there, well, then you're just going to be hearing us doing whatever we want to do, and you have no say about it.
It's all us.
There's the phone. We're going to lose 2 more minutes.
More aliens.
And I'm back. And that was awful quick, in your eyes, at least.
That's right. Another 2 minutes of missing time. So I guess that was for the aliens who probe us. Huh?
Yes, I must have been. That was Dave. That was one of the guys who games with us regularly every week.
And you will be hearing him tonight in our little skit.
Yes, our skit features Dave and John, two of the regular gamers from our campaign. So if you don't like it, it's their fault. sorry, John. Sorry, Dave. Anyway, leading into that, we have also put together a promo that we're going to start trying to send out to some of the places that might be able to promote the show. So we thought we'd go ahead and play it for you guys on the show. If you have any suggestions or feedback, let us know. We're going to go ahead and start sending it out this week, I think. But here it is.
Unless you get to us first and say, hey, that's great. Or, you know, hey, guys, that kind of blows.
All right. Here's,
of course, if you say that, give us ideas on how to fix it.
Yeah. Creative criticism.
That's right.
Creative constructive criticism. That's what we're talking about.
Okay. That's enough C's.
Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah. Okay. Here we go.
Hi there, friend. Welcome to the Dragon's Landing Inn. Come in from the cold and warm yourself by the fire.
Wow, thanks a lot. It's downright cold out there.
If you're looking for something to eat, we've got a feast of ideas and advice for tabletop RPG players over there.
Uh-huh.
And in the back room, we have interviews with gaming industry insiders.
Right.
And out here in the common room, we have lots of good, hearty discussion about all kinds of RPGs and accessories. So, what can I get for you?
One podcast later.
Little mug of beer wouldn't do us any harm. No little mug of beer wouldn't do us any harm.
Visit the Dragon's Landing podcast at www.dragonslanding.com. We're on Skype today with Michael Tresca. He's the author of a number of different role-playing products for a number of different companies. Most recently, he has written The Complete Guide to Werewolves for Goodman Games. But he's also written for other publications such as Dragon Magazine, Alderac Entertainment Group, Monkey God Enterprises, Necromancer Games, a lot of different ones. Starting out, Mike, what would you say is your... in fact, I should probably ask, do you mind being called Mike?
No, that's fine.
Okay.
That's fine.
Do you... What is your background? How did you get started in writing, particularly freelance, for the role-playing industry?
A long time ago, galaxy far, far away, I entered into an essay contest in elementary school. I'm going too far back, I know, but it's relevant.
Hey, that's fine. Go ahead.
So good. And I won the contest. For the life of me, I can't even remember what the name, what the contest was. But it was a contest where it was sort of free, it was free form writing. And I did win a cross pen with my initials in it in gold. And I sign all my contracts with that pen to this day. It's funny. Is this sad? Is this my public outing?
No, it's great.
It's a great superstition.
Isn't it? Seriously. And it hasn't failed me yet. Hasn't failed me yet. So that's when I knew I wanted to be a writer, sixth grade. And I took it from there. I had been playing Dungeons & Dragons a long time. I think I started in fourth grade. So I had been playing with just all kinds of different groups and had been a DM for something like 13 years. In fact, recently... on my bio, I think I said I had 11 years campaign, and my father reads that, and he goes, that's ridiculous. What are you talking? You've been gaming for like 20-something years. Well, the reality is it hasn't been continuous, so I'm trying to be, you know, accurate. But he was like, you've been gaming forever. So I've been gaming for most of my adult and pre-adolescent life, and my dream was to write for to work for TSR. I mean, it had always been my dream. I devoured Dragon Magazine back to issue, I want to say 60-something or 70. Wow. And I really want to do that. And, of course, my chances of that were pretty low. I was on the East Coast. I had no idea how one gets into role-playing at all in terms of publishing or writing. And I was really interested. So I sort of kept my eyes open, but I pursued other things. In fact, I'm a corporate writer now, so I'm actually in the corporate world instead. But
yeah, believe me, I understand that. I had my first degree was in creative writing, and somehow I ended up writing scripts and press releases for a direct marketing company. And
it's kind of funny how English majors end up going, well, how did I get here?
You get out with an English major, and you're like, okay, well, I got this degree. Now, what can I do with it?
That's exactly the case. That's pretty. And well, actually, the way it happened for me was I ended up working on an internship, and that's when I went to work at a bank, and they said, well, you know, your communications. Like, really? Wow, I should do. So that's how I sort of veered off in that direction. But I never lost track of writing role playing games because I really wanted to do that. Not so much. I wasn't really a big, what do they call those, fantasy heartbreakers, where you basically are like, I could write my own D&D, you know, with 500 levels and, like, special races that blow things up when they look at. No, I didn't do any of that. So, but I was interested in sort of contributing. I saw Dragon Magazine. So what happened was the D20 movement started.
Yes.
And once that came about, it took me a while to understand the nature of the open game license and the possibilities that were open. And once I figured that out, I jumped on it, I really jumped on it, at the time, and this goes to show you how different it is now from when we first started out with the license, I had two ideas. Sadly, and this is another heresy I'll admit online, was that I had switched my D&D campaign to a World of Darkness campaign with the same setting.
Okay.
Which didn't work as well as I'd hoped. It was a good idea, but it didn't work as well as I hoped. But
we did something similar to that one time. Kind of took a kind of a Renaissance style, or, you know, older style with more of the magical D&D elements, and
yes,
actually tried running it under Vampire. And
did it work?
Sort of. we only did it for like one or two sessions. Yeah. So I'm not sure how successful you'd call that.
Yeah, that's sort of how mine went. It was kind of the same thing. It was all the books too. There was like a mummy, and, you know, it was just, we were all over the place, and it probably, like I said, it's heresy for World of Darkness. But we tried it, and one of the concepts was, I had always been playing adventures that I purchased. So I had never really decided to do from scratch everything on my own. And this was one of those settings where I was just sort of writing it up on the fly. I was making things up. And I did a Russian setting that was sort of inspired from Russia. And one of the things I do as a writer, which, you know, I think I've finally just come to admit that's the way I write, is that I'm basically really big into history and sort of historical parallels. And what I've noticed, which is hysterical, is I've actually gotten a niche, and I'll get to that in a second, but I decided to try and publish this setting where these characters went in. They went. It was sort of a one-shot where they went into this mythical Russian setting. And I thought it was kind of neat, certainly because I hadn't seen as much about mythical Russia as I've seen lately. The Spirited Away, if you've ever seen that cartoon, is a fantastic. It's
heard
inspired.
Of it, but I haven't watched it.
You have to see it. You really have to see it because it really is inspired from Russian myth. So I decided to pitch that to, I think it was 63 companies. So I sent 63 emails. I basically went down the list and pitched it and waited to see who decided to basically take me up sight unseen, completely pitched it without any kind of background or anything. I mean, I said I was a writer, but even then, I don't think at that point it was that far in my business career. So just pitched it. And what happened was Monkey God, of the 63, there was one that said, we happen to be looking for a Russian setting. Wow.
No, that was fortunate, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think it would work now, honestly, if you did that, because I don't think as many people are looking for new concepts. Actually, the PDF industry seems to be much more amenable to that kind of stuff.
Right, right.
Back then, print, and that was a big thing, was print. That was the grail, was can I get it in print? Mm-hmm. So they took me up on the offer. And Monkey God treated me exceptionally well. They were sort of my home for freelancing. I knew I could always pitch a book to them. And I should point out that 90% of my work has come from me pitching to somebody else.
Really?
Which I think is weird and apparently an anomaly. I was talking to some other guys at Icon, and they said, you know, Mike's like the exception. I was like, really? You know, my inclination is to basically just write what I like and then see, and then, I mean, have it finished and then pitch it to someone.
Right.
And, you know, again, you could do that a lot more years ago. Now, probably not so much.
But you're obviously a firm believer that the whole thing is a numbers game then, right? Pitch it
in,
out enough
in terms
for somebody's...
of absolutely. I think you need it's right place, right time. Absolutely. In terms of, you know, I had 63 choices. One of them, this is a funny story. So one of them turned out to be Monkey God Enterprises, right? So now I move on. I publish all these other articles, and I'm working on Dragon, and I'm, you know, wide range. I did one that my other idea that I pitched along with the Russian setting was a setting based on All the King's Men, which was it was basically talking about English major. It was an English major's chance to put Shakespeare into D&D.
Oh, great.
Bangers as a traveling troupe of actors. And that's the big, you know, I'm giving it away, but nobody buys that adventure anyway. So. But Monkey God loved it, and it was funny because it tanked, and nobody bought it, nobody got it. It has all these jokes, like in jokes to Shakespeare, and it was obviously just written for me. And so I was sort of thinking of myself as branching out, and I pitched myself, and this is one of the few cases where I did an interview, to Privateer Press. I mean, I went to them, said hi. I knew Privateer Press is onto something great. You guys are familiar with Privateer Press?
Yes.
Nine Kingdoms, you know, they just do all kinds of stuff.
Yes.
Really excited, wanted to work for them. Went after them. This is one of the rare cases where I really pursued them. I actually had an interview at Gen Con, which is kind of funny and neat to do. And Joe Martin at the time, who was the editor, basically, you know, said, so what do you do? And I went through all this list and exactly what you're hearing here. And I mentioned Tsar Rising, which was that first book. And then I did a second one, which is called The Dancing Hut, because I knew The Dancing Hut was popular. It's from Russia. Tied those together. I was required to do a sequel by Monkey God. But that I consider to be sort of a small part of my repertoire, and they go, you know, we have a perfect setting for you to write in. And of course, it is, I'm not sure how to say it, if it's Kador or Kador, but it's the Russian theme setting for Privateer Press.
Oh, okay.
So it's kind of funny, because I think a lot of fantasy settings have analogs to, and if you know one of those cultures pretty well, you can go pretty far with it.
Right.
So I did, in the World Guide and the Player's Guide, you'll see me as a credit, I did all the Russian theme stuff.
Oh,
well, that's great. So would you suggest that other people, if they're wanting to try and get into the field, follow your example and just write what they love and pitch it out?
Well, and I guess the question becomes, do you want to do this as a career or do you want to do this as sort of a freelance on the side? I mean, obviously I have a day job.
Right.
You know, I watched Mike Merles blow through so many projects because I actually was, I think he was editor for me for one, and we were sort of, I mean, he was way ahead of me and he does some fantastic stuff, and he did this full time. I mean, he took on every project. It was absolutely fantastic to watch because he could churn out things. He could meet every deadline. He could take on more projects than I could even dream of. And I think if that's the case, you know, A, write. B, don't miss a deadline. C, keep yourself open to every kind of opportunity that's out there. And the more you do, people will notice. my approach was more along the lines of I wanted to write what I knew, and I wanted to make sure I didn't want to do sort of a shoddy job the first or second time out where I would sort of put all my heart and soul into a large book like that and then just mess it up. So I was very concerned, and I unfortunately didn't have the time to sort of write as much. So okay. For me, it was it's a little bit of a different approach. I think it's a valid approach, though. I think if you know certain material well, and it translates to fantasy, and usually that's a historical era, or you know, maybe your specialty is knights, or you know, a particular country or something. I think it right. absolutely translates. I don't know, you know, how many Russian experts, and by the way, I'm not Russian, just in case it wasn't clear, do you need in the D20 field or the gaming field? I don't know about that, and I would be leery of sort of. That's why I laughed, because I thought it was odd that people were like, well, then you can write, you know, Russian-themed stuff. You know?
Right.
I did a mercenary book, and then it was kind of funny because that wasn't visible. Then you can write the mercenary chat. And it's sort of, I don't, for me, when I take on a project, and it was funny because I mentioned this to my wife recently, she says, you'll just become the expert anyway. So it's not a big deal. She says, because I'll buy books, I'll go in the library and do research and just learn as much as I can about the topic. Because I'd love to be a scholar. I actually tried to get my doctorate. And I wasn't allowed into school there. That's why I ended up in the business world. So clearly, I want to be a scholar, even though I'm not. And
you got to pay the bills somehow, anyway.
Yeah, exactly, exactly, exactly. So that for me is much more appealing. And I don't know that that's everybody's style. In fact, right. I think it can sometimes be a hindrance because I tend to take things literally, and you know, I try and I have to back off and go, wait, there is some fantasy elements here. Let's take them, you know, a step further, or just completely invent something out of whole cloth. What I learned very quickly is very few things are invented completely new out of whole cloth. They're pretty much usually inspired by something.
And it sounds like this was one of the things that interested us. Talking a little bit about your newest product, that would be the Complete Guide to Werewolves for Goodman,
yes.
Goodman Games.
Yes.
That was one area that we were interested in. First of all, why don't you give us a little bit of an overview of exactly what the product is?
I love this book. The Complete Guide to Werewolves was a dream project. My father, and you'll see this in the intro when it comes out, it's actually available online now, which I thought was interesting. I didn't realize that it was at RPG Now, but the Complete Guide to Werewolves, when I spoke to Joseph Goodman, he basically said to me, you know, I want you to write the definitive book on werewolves from start to finish. And my father was a huge horror fan and a huge werewolf fan. Sadly, you know how you certain people, you peg them that they like a certain thing and then you buy gifts that are tied to it? He has like 30 different little fuzzy werewolves, like a werewolf keychain. I mean, it's really bad. But anyway, that concept, I was pretty well-versed, without knowing it, in werewolf lore. And I started doing more research when he gave me this opportunity. So I got to go wild. This is me doing what I like to do, which is to do as much research as possible about a topic, try and be as comprehensive as possible, and, you know, see where it takes me. And what happened was it took me into some interesting places because you got to see how the werewolf concept evolved. And probably one of the challenges that I felt personally with shapeshifters in general is that werewolves tend to get grouped under shapeshifters. And I think that's doing them a huge disservice. The werewolf myth is very specifically steeped in European lore. It's very specifically steeped in the people's fears and concerns about different issues, including, you know, I mean, not to be really gruesome, but, you know, serial killers, rapists, I mean, all kinds of stuff.
Right.
Their ideas were wrapped up in werewolves. So you lose that when you start saying shapeshifters and like, well, I can turn into a bird. You know, let's talk about the ravens and different. You start mixing cultures. I think it doesn't really bring back the werewolf as a scary thing that either you don't want to meet one and you don't want to become one.
Right.
You know, the fear of werewolves at heart is a fear of a communicable disease, quite honestly.
Mm-hmm.
And but although it wasn't always that way, I mean, there was a lot of times you could become a werewolf through different things, and I actually provide rules for that about you know, how a werewolf can happen, including sleeping under the moon, full moon. I mean, it was really, apparently Italy had a lot of werewolves just because if you slept under a full moon, you were screwed. You know, you had a chance. So there were a lot of different things around the werewolf, the nature of werewolves that I thought had not been addressed. And maybe they're not as popular because, honestly, they may sound silly, but I think in context and giving rules, I try to expand on that. The other side is that wolves have been given a disservice in the D20 system. There are a lot of fascinating things about wolves that I didn't know in terms of how their claws are made, especially balanced with webbing. So they're a lot better on ice, for example, than you think they would be. They can run for miles without tiring, better than the rules say they can, actually. Mm. So there's a lot of stuff that, combining all this lore, I just absolutely enjoyed doing. And I'm hopeful that it piques, at least if you're interested in the werewolf, it really gives you a toolkit to expand the werewolf in a way that's completely, you know, new and different. And it's not, oh, a werewolf is a lycanthrope, which, by the way, you know, that was more towards werewolves, and now it's being used for other other shapeshifters. Right. And, you know, and oh, by the way, they're vulnerable to silver, et cetera, et cetera. So for me, it was educational. Now, I do have to just say, for my long-suffering wife, who she's so patient, whenever I do a product or a project like this, I become so well-versed in it. That's all I talk about for like 3 weeks in public places. You should have seen how the mercenary book went over. But, yeah, so the werewolf, people be giving it like, so then do you know what werewolves do? And my wife says, shut up, they're looking at you. But anyway, so I like the book.
It sounds very interesting. So you actually put rules and more information in there about regular wolves as well as werewolves?
Yes, because one of the challenges I realized was that the different forms aren't really all that different. According to the rules, sort of the hybrid, which I made up my own words. I made up a word. I think it was called the leucocephalus, which means wolf-headed, is the hybrid form. And then you've got sort of the wolf form. And some of the rules didn't really give you the range to say, for example, I think some of the senses carry over to the being a human, or, you know, your normal, a humanoid, who's right. Has not changed into a wolf or werewolf form, or you know, that hybrid form. So I wanted to sort of expand what a wolf could do and also show value in being the hybrid, because certainly from and again, this is both as a player, as a DM, if you're going to play this character that has these three options, you want to have each one of them be balanced and valuable to do. And I think that was something that I tried to recreate by really putting more information in around the wolf and the leucocephalus form.
Well, and that would make sense too, also, because for druids and rangers and people who take on animal companions and various things like that, a lot of times wolf is one of the favorite ones to take on.
And yeah, and it's funny because
if you have more rules that will help you play your animal companion a lot better, it's always a good thing.
Right, and I did make the rule. I'm glad you pointed that out. A lot of the rules actually apply if you're a shapeshifter who happens to go into a wolf as well.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
There are spells for that, and there are feats that allow you to do that as well. So really what it says is your requirements can turn into a wolf, so you can use it for druids, for example.
Yeah.
Which is, it's you know, it's funny because I don't think I even put that in the description. I really should. But it is a really good point that I just think the wolf has gotten the shaft. I mean, it's sort of the bad boy of the animal world, and he doesn't get as much. People want a wolf around, but they don't understand, like, the level of the range of scent that a wolf has. You know, one of the other things that I dealt with was sort of wolves hunt just fine in moonlight and darkness. So, I mean, it's not great, but certainly they use their other senses to compensate.
Right.
And, you know, the way D&D works is, like, if you can't see, well, that's it. Who cares if you have scent or a really powerful ability to smell? You're still screwed in the dark.
And, well, Michael, I think we're actually running out of time for what we have provided here. But hey, could you give us just a quick overview of what you have coming up? Do you have any projects that you have in the fire right now?
Absolutely. I just contributed to the Etherscope book, which is coming from Goodman Games and Maladin's Gate. I did one contribution. I don't know contractually if I'm allowed to say more than that, but I did just contribute to that. So when that book comes out, it was just announced. Very excited.
Mm-hmm.
The other book and the other line is for D20 Modern, RPG Objects, Blood and Blades, The Profiler's Guide to Slashers. If you're not familiar with the Blood and series, it's by RPG Objects. It's for D20 Modern. And I do a whole bunch of stuff around those. Mostly it's been a series of horror supplements that I write with a tongue-in-cheek approach. I call it What Would Ash Do, if you're familiar with Ash from,
yes.
Evil Dead and Army of Darkness. So what I like to do is sort of write it from that perspective, not from the perspective of sort of the monsters, but how to kill these things, and usually the answer ends with a shotgun. So that's my plan anyway. So I've written two. One is Blood and Blades, The Zombie Hunter's Guide. Blood and Brains, The Zombie Hunter's Guide. One was Blood and Spooks, The Ghost Hunter's Guide. And this is the third in the series, which is Blood and Blades, The Profiler's Guide to Slashers. I had to change a little bit because slashers are a very specific type of character. They're not just serial killers. I wanted to sort of emphasize the horror piece of it. And I had a lot of fun with, so I'm looking forward to that as well.
Well, thanks a lot, Michael. We've really enjoyed having you on the show, and we look forward to seeing these products when they come out. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
and welcome to Pronunciation Corner. I'm your host, Michael Cardwallop, and I have with me today Sir Reginald Foggybottom, Professor of Etymology at Oxford and Chairman of the Queen's Society for Standards and Pronunciation. Good evening, Sir Reginald.
I say, good evening, Michael.
There has been much discussion in many different forums regarding the pronunciation of the name of the Dark Elves.
Indeed.
Sir Reginald, would you be so good as to give us your answer to the age-old debate?
Well, certainly. I'm sorry, what is the question?
Would you tell us how to pronounce the name of the Dark Elves?
Oh, I see. Well, I always pronounce it Dark Elves. Some people might say Elves, but they would be wrong, for it is common.
Yes, I'm sorry, Sir Reginald, I may not have made my meaning clear. I wasn't asking how to pronounce Dark Elves, but rather, how do you pronounce their proper name?
Proper name?
Yes.
Well, they all have proper names, do they not?
Yes, of course, but...
Don't their proper names have lots of Z's and V's and X's all thrown together with lots of apostrophes at odd places in the...
Yes, they do, but you see...
That's a regular nightmare for a pronunciation scholar, I'll tell you that for certain.
Yes, but of course, listen, I mean, I'm talking about the name of the race.
Name of the race?
Yes.
You mean drow.
Ah, so it is definitely pronounced drow and then not as in cow and not dro as in...
Well, of course it is. Would you pronounce cow, co, or would you pronounce pow, po, or thou, though?
No, I wouldn't. But would you pronounce throw, throw, or glow, glow, or no, now?
Of course I wouldn't, you silly man. What is it that you're really talking about, anyway?
Right. I guess we have our answer to the age-old question, how do you pronounce drow? Join us next time when we discuss the pronunciation of ixtikik. That flying manta ray-looking thing.
Well, here on The Dragon's Landing, we have a feature article that we've put together for you, and Lonnie's going to be leading this one off. We thought we'd like to talk about how a player would be able to use the same techniques that an author uses to create characters, and use those same techniques to create a background, a good, solid, wide background for your character that you can create fairly quickly, but that becomes fairly comprehensive and really gives you a personality and really gives you something to play off of. So Lonnie's going to go ahead and kick this one off. So Lonnie?
That's right. These are great things to do before you ever put your stats together, before you ever get hit points or assign, you know, numbers to your strength or whatever your system has for character creation. If you do these beforehand, it'll give you a much better way to put it together and actually make the numbers fit your character. Be much more fun. Now, a lot of authors will go very exhaustive techniques, you know, doing 4 or 5 page questionnaires that deal details their favorite color and what their high school was and how they got along with people in their high school, you know, and how their family was. But for our purposes, that's way too involved, and I can't even stand to do those myself. but I do have 2 resources here that I wanted to throw your guys' way. The first one are called Enneagrams. Enneagrams, yeah. Enneagrams. Grams, if you want to search those on the web. One great website is 9types.com, and that's the number 9, TYPES.com. And they list the 9 personality types right there on the front page. They give real quick descriptions of the 9 types. If you click on the description, it'll bring you up a list of different items, like how they get along with people, good things about being that type of personality, and difficulties and challenges you might have as being that personality, which will give you great ways to interact with other players in your game. And like I said, it's very quick to do. You can click on a couple links, see which one you like, print out the page. If you click on the type name, they'll give you healthy and unhealthy patterns. For example, the first one that they list is called the Reformer. Under their unhealthy patterns, it lists that they have a fear of being condemned, and this curses them to correct other people and condemn other people before those people have a chance to come back at them. And we've all known people like this. Mm-hmm. You know, this is all based on real personalities. It's come through a lot of scientific study. And of course, when people do start correcting and condemning other people before, you know, they get a chance to be shot down, what does that do? That makes people angry at them and start shooting them down, which just forces this vicious cycle. But all the nine types have really great ideas that are very short and sweet that you can use just to kind of prompt yourself during gaming. If your brain's, you know, getting late in the night and your brain's feeling a little foggy, you can kind of read it over and go, oh, okay, maybe this would be fun to put in here because this would fit the character. Another thing you can do is to write a – this is from a book called You Can Write a Novel by James V. Smith, Jr., and he lists some very methodical, very simple and quick ways to do characters. And what he suggests is a very brief bio, just, you know, nothing more than a paragraph or two, maybe throw in a few ideas about some distinctive language patterns that your character might have, you know, whether they use really bad grammar, and of course you might want to say how they use that grammar, if they've got an accent, anything like that. And then the neatest part is he breaks it down into three goals that your character has. The three goals he lists are career or idealistic goals, and these are things that a character seeks to fulfill a higher call. For instance, and this is straight from his book, in the pilot novel of the Force Recon series, Lieutenant Swain's primary goal is to rescue the commandant of the Marine Corps who's been snatched by terrorists. This goal conflicts with the goal of the terrorists and, of course, becomes the central storyline. And while you don't have control over the storyline that your game master is running, game masters are very often influenced by problems in a character's life. So this can give your character something to do other than just say, yeah, I'm going to follow the group along, you know, just kind of tag along. This will give you something to actually get in there and play with and actually get your teeth into. The second type of goal are selfish goals. Everybody has self-interest and base instincts. This category addresses those. For example, Swain's secondary goal is to prove that his grandfather was wrong in thinking the lieutenant doesn't have what it takes to be a Force Recon Marine. The third type of goal are romantic or sexual goals, and this doesn't mean, you know, hey, I want to go have sex with that whore over there. It doesn't have to be something as simple as that.
How did whores creep back into this show again?
I think it's because of John.
Could be.
John's character. Not John. Don't get me wrong here. John's character.
Yeah.
But this can address those categories. It addresses both the animal urges and the love interests of the characters. For example, you know, maybe your character's had some bad history in the past that kind of haunts her or him. It kind of addresses all those. And if you get all three of those goals down in, you know, just a sentence each, maybe even just a couple of words each, that'll give you something you can look at really quickly to kind of remember where your character's at in their life. And so that was just a couple ideas there that authors use to help with your characters. And like I said, if you do this before you ever start actually creating your character, you've got some great ideas. Instead of just always going for, hey, I want the really high strength because I'm going to be a fighter. Maybe it'd be more fun because of your character's background to have, you know, maybe he was a clumsy kid. Well, if he's clumsy, maybe your dex would be low, even though that wouldn't be the most advantageous to the character as far as stats go. But it'd be more fun and allow you a whole lot better chance at roleplay aspects.
And that does lead into our hook of the week. If you hadn't noticed, last week and this week, both times we've tried to relate our hook of the week to what our feature article is. And we're going to do our best to try and do it that way, is to try and keep them together. And relating an adventure hook to a character's background, this was our take on it. This is also going back a few years into a game that actually Lonnie ran.
Should I bow?
it was one of the more fun and definitely one of the more memorable games that I have been involved in. And part of what made it memorable was whenever he came over for the first session, instead of us creating characters, he handed us little slips of paper that had very low attributes. I mean, he had the strength, intelligence, wisdom, dexterity, all of those. They were all very low.
They didn't give any negatives.
They didn't have any negatives, but they were all just very, very, very average. And he handed them out to all of us and said, these are your attributes. You're 12 or 14 or something like that.
I think it was 12.
Yeah. And we started the game as 12-year-olds with no class. Well, we never have any class. But with no skills, with no character class, with nothing like that. We were kids just playing around through situations that kind of foreshadowed what was going to happen in the full adventure once it went on. And we did this for a couple game sessions and really got to play our characters as kids. And all we had to focus on was the characterization and the background. And then once we had our characters down pretty good, we fast forwarded about 4 or 5 years.
Right.
And he gave everybody, he said, you have a pool of this many points that you can add to your abilities to show how your ability scores changed as you matured and grew. And those became our starting attributes. And at that point, we were able to take on our first level of the class that we had kind of foreshadowed what we were going to do as we were kids. And from there, we played out the rest of the adventure. And those characters were some of the best developed and some of the most interesting and, like I said, most memorable characters we have ever played. So that would be the idea that I would give to you. Try starting a campaign at zero level, and particularly at zero level where your adventurers are kids, and see what kind of relationships develop between the players' characters and various things like that. So
yeah, it was an experiment, but it turned out working really well because of the players. You know, for example, one of the characters' kids got bullied around a lot, and I don't remember what his drawback was, but they, you know, in the character's personality, it had given him kind of a drawback, and he'd always gotten bullied because of that, and so he became kind of a champion character as the game went on, mm-hmm. because of that background. And all of the characters took things that had happened to him in their childhood during this stuff and added that into their characters, which really fleshed them out and gave a great flavor to the entire game.
So our challenge to you is to try and use this hook, or try and use the hook from last week. We would actually like to hear from any DMs who have used any of the hooks that we've had, and to let us know how it worked out for them. See what their actual responses are to using something like we have talked about on the show.
Yeah, and if you change it a little bit, let us know that too, and let us know how it worked out. Because of course we still game.
Oh yeah,
you know, almost every week we would love to be able to use some of these ideas.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I guess all that leaves for today is the poll question for this week. Last week's poll question, of course, was, which do you prefer, a fast-leveling campaign or a slow-leveling campaign? And I was sorely outvoted. I was very, very disappointed to find out. I like a fast-leveling campaign, and I mentioned it last week. And I think I had exactly one other person that agreed with me that they liked a fast-leveling campaign. And we had like 14 or 15 that mm-hmm. said, take it slow and easy. So, you know, okay, so maybe the slow-leveling is better.
Well, like we discussed last week, I think it depends a lot on what your definition of slow is, too.
Right, and that really is true. I mean, if I was playing with a DM that wanted to level once every 10, 20, or 30 gaming sessions, I wouldn't be gaming with them 10, 20. Right. I wouldn't be gaming with them long enough to get into single level. I'd be finding something else to do. So, but
let me do something, please.
But this week we're going to talk. We want to talk about, and this is kind of a cliche one, but I'd like to hear what your take is on it. Which do you like, high magic or low magic campaign worlds? Now, once again, this is going to leave out the more modern gamers, but
right.
Well, to some extent, I mean, you know, there are modern games, plenty of modern games out there that use use magic as well.
White Wolf series.
White Wolf series do. The Shadowrun games use a lot of magic. So if you're using a campaign system that uses magic, which do you prefer, a high magic campaign world or a low magic campaign world? What do you think, Lonnie?
Man, I hate to do this. I keep going middle of the road on a lot of these because while, you know, I love Forgotten Realms and I'm loving Eberron, which just has magic strewn all over the place, and that is a ton of fun, I'll give you that. But I also like the nitty-gritty of being able to, you know, maybe be thrown in someplace as slaves or something and have almost no magic to help you get out of these situations. So it relies just on your character's thoughts and creativity to get out of it. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no coming back from the dead when you made a simple mistake and fell off a cliff or something, you know. I find those to be a lot of fun. What about you?
Well, I can't say that I find low magic campaign worlds to be much fun. I don't. I like magic in my games, but that's what's impressed me with Eberron is it's restrained magic. There's lots of it there.
Yeah, there's tons of it there, but it doesn't get in the way.
It doesn't get in the way. It's not all readily available. There are, you know, there's a lot of magic in the world, but you have to look a long way to find high-level characters. A lot of the world is actually keeps to lower levels, which keeps a lot of the higher level stuff out of your grasp.
Right.
Resurrection, they also worked it into the rules that resurrection and raise dead spells, you have to have a good reason for.
Good.
They say that basically no clergy in Eberron will really go through and just be, you know, resurrecting people left and right. You need it takes more than just saying, okay, here's my 2,000 gold or whatever it's going to cost, whatever my donation has to be,
right.
Resurrect my friend. they have to believe that there is a real reason that this character needs to come back, you know, before they will do it.
Good. I very much like that because that makes your deaths mean something.
Yeah. Well, and on top of that, even in Sharn, I believe if you look in the Sharn source book, I think it says there's a grand total of just a handful, like less than 5 people in all of Sharn, which has over 200,000 people in it, who could even cast the Raise Dead spell. And nobody who's high enough level to cast Resurrection or True Resurrection.
Right.
So, I mean, I like that. I like the fact that the magic is there, that it's all around you, that they throw in magical things in the surroundings to give you that kind of feel to the world. And yet it's not something where everywhere you turn, there's a really quick and easy magic situation that you can pull out of your bag. And
right. And I'm really enjoying that so far. And especially with the way you put it there with, you know, not having the access to those spells and having to have a reason kind of takes care of some of my problems with the super high magic campaigns.
Right.
You know, because that way there is a danger. Mm-hmm. And you actually feel that danger as you're in combat and you're going, oh, crap, I could die here. You know, do I run? Do I? My character is extraordinarily brave, braver than I am. Do I have her go ahead and do it, even though she's got, like, you know, 2 pieces of health left, 2 hit points, whichever system you're using, you know?
Right.
And it actually kind of makes you stop and think about those decisions and brings that fear and that excitement back into the thing instead of going, I'm going to die, but Matthias over there has a raised dead wand. So who cares, you know? I like that.
So I believe that's our poll for this week. Let's hear your take on it. And once again, we got absolutely nobody on the message board who was willing to actually talk about the fast leveling versus slow leveling. Let's see if somebody wants to get on and talk about high magic versus low magic. We'd love to hear from you.
Absolutely. We're not trying to make you feel super guilty, just a little bit, because we did have people actually take the poll. They just didn't want to comment and talk about it. So.
And I believe that pretty much does it for our show this week. I think we managed to pack quite a bit of stuff in here.
It's been a busy week, and we've got lots more coming.
Yes,
we've gotten more interviews that we're working on setting up, more review material that we'll be able to talk to you about.
Mm-hmm.
And just to give you the website again for Creative Games, it was creativegames.com.
Nope. Oh. www.creativemountaingames.com.
See, that's why you're here.
That's the only reason I'm here. Well, thanks a lot for listening. We will be back next week with some more good information and probably some more interviews and various things. We haven't put next week's show together yet, but we will. So.
In that case, we will see you next week, and we look forward to talking to you on the message boards.
Thanks for listening.
Little mug of beer wouldn't do us any harm. No little mug of beer wouldn't do us any harm.
Tabletop RPG players over there. And in the back room, we have interviews with gaming industry insiders.
Right.
And out here in the... What was that?
Right.
Hi there.
This chair is dangerous. It makes me sound like I'm farting.
Hi there, friend. Come in from the cold and warm yourself by the fire. We'll get this eventually. It'll be there. It'll happen. I swear.